Behind the Wheel
with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, can you believe it? He's on time today. It's Peter Hitchener.
Hello there. Good to see you, Miller. Yes, in fact, I tried to get here early today just to make sure I didn't miss a second of what's going to be an action-packed show. It's going to be just fantastic. Looking forward to hearing what you think of your latest BMW.
The X3. Now, as you know, the X3's been around for a while. It's been a big seller for BMW.
Ooh,
probably
yes.
Not as big as they would have hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say the outgoing X3... always, to me, felt it lacked just a little bit of polish on the interior. Like, it was always a nice car, but it never felt like a really proper luxury car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whole different ballgame. Jumped into it, and the first thing I noticed was bits and pieces that you'd find in a 7 Series.
Wow, that's pretty good. In an X3, well
done. In an X3. Mm. An amazing amount of interior space, roomy, airy, as quiet as anything. Quieter than any Lexus I've ever driven, which is
good
a
heavens.
Big call.
That's very good.
Lots to love about the BMW X3. I think it's going to be a big car for those guys.
Mm.
And I'll take you around the block in it a little later in the show.
I'm looking forward to that. I'll be back in Japan. I recorded some audio checking out the cars of Tokyo, and we can talk about that a little bit later on too.
Excellent. Are you driving and eating sushi at the same time? Or maybe poisonous puffer fish at the same time?
Oh, no. I steer clear of the puffer fish, and people do not drive and eat in Japan.
Oh, they wouldn't, would they?
No, not the ones I've noticed. Nor does it seem that people eat in the street. So, you know, in many Australian cities, you see people eating as they walk down the street.
Normally with their mouth open.
Oh, I'm not editorializing to that extent.
Leave that to me.
But it doesn't really happen. It doesn't seem to happen over there. But anyway.
They don't even talk on their mobile phone in the train either, do they?
Well, no, not encouraged to. However, it isn't unusual in this day and age to see people, say a family of four, sitting at a table, all of them on their mobile phones. So it's not that different from Melbourne.
Right, okay.
Now, the new Mercedes-Benz, all over social media, I've been seeing the launch of the A-Class.
Mm-hmm.
David McCarthy has been tweeting about it, putting it on Insta and letting us know that it really looks amazing. It does, doesn't it?
It does too. It's got a bit of a sour look on its face, though, I noticed.
Well, yeah, I suppose beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
I like it, don't get me wrong, but it looks like it sort of, you know, had something bitter or something, maybe, you know, a larger slice of lime than it was prepared for. It's gin and tonic.
You're so funny. Or it had one of those lovely Italian canottos. Which you think, oh, this is going to be like Coca-Cola. No, it's not.
A car that I am excited to see on Aussie roads. It's not far away. Less than 4 weeks, we're going to see the all-new Volkswagen Polo. And you might remember from late last year, we spoke to Paul from VW telling us a little bit about what to expect.
Mm.
And it's a bit of a reminder that the Polo is essentially a much bigger car than the car it replaces, but priced remarkably well.
And look, I love the Polo that's just been superseded.
The GTI
that was a wonderful
car. What a hoot. Yeah.
It was just great fun. It was very functional. And now it's going to have a bit more space, which will be good. Most excited.
Excellent. Well, we'll hear from Paul a little later in the show. We'll hear from Joel as well. He's been driving the very funky, large SUV from Peugeot. The 5008. So just with their numbers, because they've got the 2008, the 3008, and now the 5008. So I'm thinking this thing must be a monster.
Well, it looks very snazzy in the in the pics I've seen of it. It looks terrific. And
I can't figure out how big it is. Anyway, we'll talk to Joel in a couple of minutes.
Joel, yes.
He will. Simon Lai, he's been driving the Honda Accord V6, which I believe we liked last year, Pete, until we found out the price.
That was the only thing that was kind of ruled it out a little bit for me. It was beautifully built, lovely to drive, nice to live with, and you find out how much it is, and you think, wait a second, I better sit down for a minute.
And Rachel Franco, she's along with a question that I know we'll have a whole lot of fun with. I think it could be a rather long segment because she's asking us to reminisce back to the times that our cars made fools out of us.
Oh, I had one that used to do it every time I got into it. I always caught my shin on the damned instrument cluster or whatever it is that goes right out to the door, and you just couldn't swing your way into the car without scratching some skin off the leg. I did not like that at all.
No. And for anyone who ever thought Peter Hitchener never swears, if you'd been anywhere within the vicinity of that happening, you may have been.
Oh, and here's another thing about when your car makes a fool of you. Try dropping your credit card down between the seat and the center console.
Yeah, well, first of many cars that we've got to get through on this week's show, Pete. Some exciting ones coming, new stuff from Mercedes and Volkswagen. But this is one I've been looking forward to hearing about because I've got to say, over the last couple of years, now, it's a line that I'd normally use about Honda, but Peugeot, they've definitely got their mojo back. I think
yes.
It's fair to say.
Yep, I agree with you.
That 2.8 GTI, I think, is just one of the most cracking little hot hatches that you yes. can buy on the market.
Correct.
Of course, they've got a series of little SUVs, 2008, 3008, and now it seems there's a big one, and the big man's been there to check it out. It is the motoring guru that is Joel Helms. G'day, Joel. How are you going?
Guys, I'm very well, thank you.
Good Excellent. To hear, Joel. It looks magnificent. How is it in the metal?
It's very good. Very good in the metal. Very surprised, actually. But of course, if you remember back last year, a couple of our people, our contributors, they nominated the 3008 for Car of the Year, and it certainly had a lot of conversation around it because it's a good offering. But yeah, the 5008, not outdone at all by its slightly smaller sister.
So the 5008 would, I would imagine, represent an SUV the size of, say, a Jeep Grand Cherokee that big?
No, not that big, no, but seven seats.
Okay.
Probably more along the lines, I suppose, of X-Trail would be
okay.
About the closest I could think of, yeah. So the rear seats 6 and 7, really only for kids,
Say. Or people you don't like.
Exactly. Yes. Right. Or particularly little people.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Right. And engines, what's on offer?
Okay, so there's three different specification levels available in the new 5008. There's the standard one, the base model, which is called the Allure, and then there's the GT line, the mid-spec one. They're both available exclusively with a 1.6-litre turbo petrol engine. It develops 121 kilowatts, 240 newton metres. It's the only one that I got to drive on the launch.
Right.
But there is also a diesel that's available in the top spec 5008 GT. And it's got some pretty good figures here, 133 kilowatts and 400 newton metres. And certainly looking forward to having a drive of that one. And that could be, after driving the petrol and the smaller capacity petrol, it could be the one that maybe you look at if you're going to tow with it or more regularly load a cart around a bigger load, say seven people.
Mm. It sounds figures-wise a little underdone, that turbo 4, 1.6, pretty small capacity as well. What was it like? Kind of, was it okay in city traffic? Kept up with things all right?
Yeah, no major complaints at all. I thought it wasn't underdone at all. I thought it was more than adequate. Obviously, couldn't compare it to the diesel, but
sure.
I didn't feel like it was underpowered in any great way. But certainly, what made up for it is just this car's road manners. I couldn't believe how well it handled, and the ride also was really well sorted.
Oh, nice.
The top of the range model looks very glamorous indeed. What's the fit and finish like?
Fit and finish throughout is very good. The only area where I could take a point or two off, the third row of seats, or I think it was the third row of seats, they just had a little rattle here and there that you'd get.
Ooh, I don't like that.
I hate rattles.
Especially on a car that's there to wow the media and makes those noises.
I suppose the trade-off of that is that the third row of seats you can very, very easily remove. Essentially, you don't need any tools. You just pull a strap and they come out. The seats are very flexible. There's a lot of different ways that you can move the seats and lay the seats down, including the front passenger seat. It folds down flat, so you can put things like surfboards and things in, and you've got like 3.18 metres of available length there to store longer things. It's very smart inside. And the only other thing too, and I know you guys are aware of this, the cruise control stalk.
Yes. Where's it hiding this time?
It's hiding in exactly the same spot, which means you can't see it, and if you don't know what those buttons and controls do, you will not be able to use the cruise control on the go. So there had to be something that's particularly French, and that's it.
And that's
yes.
it. Yep. I must say, I noticed the architecture of the 2000 and 3008, probably that interior architecture is one of the more, I suppose, well-rounded and well-executed in the industry today. 5008, does it follow a similar theme?
Yeah, very similar. Very similar to the 3008 inside. You've got those little piano key shortcuts on the dash and the tiny little steering wheel with the flat top and the flat bottom, which I think works just as well in the slightly larger vehicle. And, it's a thoroughly attractive vehicle, I suppose, is the way you put it. You know, you could drive it in the nicer suburbs, and you wouldn't feel outdone. And then you know, it's also handy enough to cart the kids around as well.
So, yeah, great.
One thing that is that the Peugeot does have an advantage over a lot of other models: 20,000K service intervals, which is
That does make a difference. Better. Yeah,
that could be more than a year for the up against the average amount of K's that people are doing. So that's very good.
Yeah, fair enough too. The big question: how much?
The big question, well, it's a fairly hefty price tag. They're expecting to sell about 65% of all these 5008s in the base model Allure, and that's $42,990, which is pretty hefty. But, you do get a lot of standard features, everything including autonomous emergency braking and Apple CarPlay and reverse camera and sat-nav, digital radio, that type of thing. So very well stacked, and, of course, seven seats standard across the range. $46,990 for the mid-spec model, $52,990 for the GT.
That's a lot of coin. I suppose the question is then, do you buy the Peugeot 5008 for the sort of the top-spec one, or do you go and spend the same money on, say, a Volkswagen Tiguan in top-spec?
Look, I lamented that you can't get the petrol engine in the top spec. That seems to be a little bit odd for me, because not everybody wants the diesel.
Yeah.
Well, probably this vehicle, as much as I admire it, I really like the on-road manners, that type of thing. I would probably myself go for something Japanese that was a little bit less expensive, but a lot of people are drawn to the more prestigious and slightly more glamorous
exclusive
brands.
Exclusive
brands like Peugeot, and are happy to pay that extra. So,
yeah, fair enough too.
And it's justified, I suppose you'd say, by the features and by the look and feel and finish of the car.
Now, you're a busy boy next week, I believe.
Checking out the new Holden Commodore, so we'll be able to talk about that next week. Really, one of the cars I've been really looking forward to having a drive of, to see if it is in fact a Commodore or if it's sort of like a Peugeot 5008.
That is the question.
Exactly.
Joel Helms, as always, great to talk to you, man. Have fun.
Thanks, guys.
The ideal family vehicle has seven seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With seven seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone's raving about, or havel.com.au.
For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
In today's Tokyo Car Adventure, I come across a Toyota Alphard, which is a kind of executive people mover. This was the top-of-the-range Royal Lounge Executive Express. How about that? The car is also sometimes sold as a Toyota Velfire with a V. And then I head across towards a car gallery in Ginza where they sell exotic used vehicles.
Now I've taken another look at one of these Alphards. Unless it's an Alpha RD, it's not an Alpha, I can tell you that. Alphard. No, makes no sense. However, underneath it, by way of explanation, it says it is an executive lounge, and I think that says it all. I think. Oh, and here's another of those. It looks like a restyled latest version of the London taxis, but indeed it is a Toyota. It's probably quite a good idea, good thinking. Now walking towards Gallery G735. I suppose that's Ginza 735. There's a New York Gallery Tokyo, New York Gallery Osaka, and this one in Ginza, and it is chock-a-block with fabulous cars. You'd be in your element here, Miller. Here is the G735 Gallery. Don't touch. No, no, no. This is the R8 Audi. There we are. There's the rear-mounted engine on show with the flap up at the back. Oh, and look at those Look at those exhaust pipes. They've kind of got a metallic blue burnt onto them. All for show, I suppose, but hey, it looks nice. Do not touch, and the price is 9,380,000 yen. It's a Quattro Artronic in ice silver, an R8, 4.2 FSI, joined by a McLaren. And the McLaren is 16,800,000 yen, special graphite grey, MP412C, leather, don't touch. Beautiful, lovely car. And to go with the grey is a two-tone red and black upholstery. No diamond stitching, oh dear. But still very nice. And again, the rear-mounted engine, neatly tucked away in under there. And even though the boot is up, you can't really see much of the engine, except some big air intakes. Very nice. Now, I meant to say, the Audi is left-hand drive for some reason. These others seem to be right-hand drive. All the cars are for sale, I've just found out. And an Aston Martin, which looks so smart. Very stylish. Let's see what it says. This is a Vanquish Touchtronic 2 in Maron Black, 24 million yen. That'll do it nicely. Don't touch. No, I won't. Nice car. Tan inside, tan upholstery. And as is to go with these, well, you probably could get someone in the back if you really didn't like them much. There's a Range Rover. It's probably less exotic than some of the other vehicles here, but looks lovely with the red and black upholstery inside. 14,500,000 yen, and again, it's right-hand drive. Some of the Ferraris, however, are left-hand drive. This one is. This is a Ferrari California F1 DCT 20AW. Bianco Avus, 16,300,000 yen. It's done 16,500 kilometres. And new, I think it was about 23,600 yen. Oh, just a snap. Say it quickly, it doesn't hurt so much. And another Ferrari, California again, Rosso Corsa, the lovely red, 29,800,000 yen. 32,800 was the new price. It's done 9,300 kilometres. Don't touch. No, I know. I won't. Ah, this time, another Ferrari. How yellow is yellow, I wonder? It's a 458 Speciale. 39 million, it says. Left-hand drive. Nice. If you decide that the prices for the cars here, I've just ruled you out for the moment. You didn't get cashed up before you came here, and it's always a good idea at Ginza. There are other things you can purchase. On the walls, there are artworks. And there, oh, there's a snip. There's a pair of, well, they look like stilettos with a kind of a battering ram at the toes, just in case you have to kick your way through. And it says lunch date, 127,440 yen. So it's not the cheapest lunch date you've ever been on, but it's cheaper than a Ferrari.
Yeah, well, product review time, and they say there are two certainties in life, death and taxes. However, there's a third that most people forget about, and that is just about anything made of metal will rust. So before you go to remove those rusty screws or loosen a rusty nut or bolt, give it a good squirt of our product of the week, Workshop Wonders Get In There Aerosol. It's available now from the Alltrex Auto Accessories online store. Only costs $9.99, and this quality car plan product does more than just help free rusty screws and bolts. How are your locks? Not quite as free and easy as they used to be? Well, this is the product that you need. Get In There Aerosol is made from a special blend of base oil, solvents, and can help by deeply penetrating and freeing up joints and components. And it works wonders on rusty chains too. We've managed to get our hands on the all-new BMW X3. Now, this is a really important car for BMW. I think the first thing you notice is it's obviously an X3. That evolutionary styling that BMW is famous for continues. It's when you get inside that you notice the most of the changes over the outgoing X3. We've really upped the luxury in here. It is just beautifully finished, and in fact, probably more reminiscent of the all-new 5 Series or even the 7 Series. You can really see the attention to detail. It really is a class act. The digital dashboard's absolutely stunning, can be configured to all sorts of different variations. I think my favourite bit, though, is when you bang it into sport and everything kind of goes red and gets a bit of an angry look about it. And it's the sheer amount of interior space that's probably the most surprising. It's such a light, airy cabin, and in fact has more space inside than the original X5. Some of the standard equipment, you get the automatic tailgate as standard, along with the adaptive LED headlights, a magnificent BMW head-up display that again can be configured individually to suit your mood. You've got Driving Assistant Plus, which takes in your radar cruise control, auto emergency braking, lane keep assist. It really does have a whole host of safety equipment that you expect in 2018. It's great to drive. It is an SAV, sports activity vehicle, as BMW like to call it. So you've got that higher ride. It's not the most sort of sporting car that you've ever driven, but really it's designed to be a family hauler, and it does that brilliantly. You will find under the bonnet, we've got the top of the range. It's the 3-litre turbo diesel, 195 kilowatts, 620 newton meters of torque. It is about the most effortless car you can drive. Does everything at around about, 1500 revs. It'll do a sprint to 100 kilometers an hour in just on 5.8 seconds. And it is, the drive experience is what BMW is all about, but it's the luxury in this car that's the most apparent. Yes, it's a nice car to drive. It's got plenty of oomph, as I suggested, but just the way it gets around. Like, we're travelling now at just on 43 kilometres an hour, and you can barely hear the road outside, let alone the diesel engine that's under the bonnet. Of course, BMW's famous 8-speed automatic, it's as good as ever in this guise. And being xDrive, that means it's all-wheel drive, with a small bias towards the rear, but it's not hugely noticeable, I must say. And I'd suggest if you do want to save a few dollars, the S-Drive versions of the X3, probably the ones to go for, unless you're sort of going off-road. This car at $83,000 is not cheap by any means, but wow, this is kind of about as good as it gets when it comes to premium SUVs in that mid-size class. The options on this car include a beautiful brown paint job, a big sunroof, and something that BMW call dynamic damper control. And I suppose that has a lot to do with why this car sits so flat in bends. But the options on this car, as with pretty much any of the European cars, can mount up. The car we're driving at the moment, $94,280. Shop it up against the Audi Q5, which has also lifted its game recently. The Mercedes GLC, it wasn't all that long ago that it was the brand new one on the block, but it would seem that, it's the old one in this group now. And look, worth a look, but I still think if it was me, my money might be going towards BMW, closely followed by Audi. Check it out for yourself, though. You can see more at the website anytime, behindthewheel.com.au.
The key to success is to properly promote your business. Altrex Auto Accessories have a simple and cost-effective way of getting your message to thousands of people every day: promotional number plate protectors. Altrex Auto Accessories promotional number plate protectors could be screen printed with your business or dealership name, logo, phone number, whatever you require. To find out more about this affordable and effective marketing idea, visit altrex.com.au or call 02-9905-5055.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel, where motoring starts.
Well, we've been to Japan, we've been driving in the all-new BMW X3, which was rather luxurious, I've got to say. Pete, they've really upped their game there, haven't they? The quietness of that cabin was just sensational.
Yep.
A person who's never quiet in a cabin is Rachel Franco.
Oh, no.
And she's up in the next 10 minutes or so, wanting to investigate the times that your car's made a fool out of you.
Oh, yes. Good.
You should see right. My list. It goes for about 4 foolscap pages.
Oh, you mean?
And they're only the times I can remember.
There are so many of those. Aren't yes, there? Indeed.
We're talking a brand new Mercedes-Benz in a couple of minutes, but right now, talking about an important car for Volkswagen, and one that I'm genuinely excited about because the car it replaces is a hoot.
It's a fabulous car. Really great car.
Whether or not it's in the absolute base model or whether it's got a GTI badge on it, the Volkswagen Polo is always a car that kind of brings joy, brings a smile to your face.
It does.
The new one, I believe, is considerably larger both inside and out. And to give us a bit more info about when it's coming and all that sort of stuff, we say a big behind the wheel welcome back to Paul Pottinger from Volkswagen Australia. G'day, Paul. How are you going?
Afternoon, gents. How are you both?
Very well, thanks, Paul. The outgoing Polo was very outgoing indeed. It was great fun and good to drive. What's the new one going to be like? I gather it's bigger, roomier, faster?
Well, you're quite right. It literally enlarges upon it. It is in every respect larger. I think what we're looking at here is something which is the size of a Golf from the middle of the previous decade, but which is priced significantly below the current Golf, which gives us a fabulous position. I think it gives us a unique position too. The new Polo is in every respect something of a segment buster. I know we're very quick to assign cars segments, and I think some of them don't really have any basis in reality or anything there, the buying public can particularly relate to. I mean, with this one, for example, you've got a car which competes on price and indeed in some respects capacity with your entry-level Mazda 3s and cars of that ilk, but it's priced against a Mazda 2.
And even though it's grown in sort of interior space and footprint, from a weight point of view, it's still, it's pretty good, isn't it?
Well, it's almost exactly the same. And that's also true of consumption, and that's down to the fact that I think it's a very exciting engine, actually. And you would never have thought exciting belonged in the same sentence as a 1 litre engine.
No. you're right.
But it's top tune in the Polo comfort line. It's a three-cylinder, 1 litre engine. It's got the same torque as the entry-level Golf from the middle of last year, which has only just been superseded, 200 newton metres. From a 1 litre engine.
Three-cylinder, that's just incredible.
It's extraordinary. The things that are possible in this day and age, and as you said, really just in the past year, is amazing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, less really can be more. And I think, although you also get more with this as well as less, in some respects.
It kind of does.
Danger of mangling my metaphor.
Oh, don't do that.
A three-cylinder engine that I was always very fond of, I believe we found in the Volkswagen Up of years gone past, and it had a thrum about it that was just thoroughly addictive. Do you get a similar sort of feel?
Yeah, you really do. And I'm looking down on the sort of management car park at the moment, which is full not of Arteons and Tiguans, but actually three-cylinder Polos that everyone's enjoying driving them so much at the moment. I was in the comfort line just yesterday, actually, and you do get that very distinctive, roughy thrum is a good word for it. Sound, it is wholly addictive. And I think, we all like to drive and we probably all flirt with the limits of legality whether we intend to or not sometimes. Mm. I think the great thing about this car is that you get a real sense of acceleration out of it, but you're still well within the bounds of legality.
Mm. Excellent.
That's the fun of it.
Price-wise, you say it's priced, sort of the same or under the outgoing car?
It's a little over. It's a few dollars more, but it's very much more. We're starting at $17,990 for the five-speed manual trend line. That's got a 70-kilowatt version of the engine. It's 2.5 for a seven-speed DSG. And the other launch version at the moment, we're going to have the comfort line with 85 kilowatts and the 200 Nm. I spoke so glowingly of a moment ago.
Yeah.
With a six-speed manual at $19,490 and a seven-speed DSG for $21,990. But wait, there's more. We're also going to do a launch edition, which has a whole bunch of extra kit, including 16-inch alloys, and that's $20,490 for a 6-speed manual and $22,990 for the 7-speed DSG, all of which are still comfortably beneath the Golf 7.5, as we call it. And, of course, the buying habits of our customers are such that the average purchase price for a Golf is closer to $30,000 than the $23,990 entry.
Can't wait to see one on the road. When will that happen?
It will happen from the first week of March. They're in the shops from then. That's only the beginning of the Polo story for us this year, because mid-year we're going to have the GTI, which we've actually, last time we spoke about.
Yep.
That's 147 kilowatts and 320 Nm in a Mark 4. Yeah, I know.
It's going to be so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be some ugly scenes around here as we all try and get into that.
Everyone wants the keys.
I imagine there'll be some ugly scenes too when the covers come off the GTI original, the hark back to what GTI was, three-door, and I believe the cheapest Volkswagen Golf GTI ever in Australia.
Yeah, it is actually in dollar terms and certainly in real terms. People have wanted an entry Golf GTI with just the tartan seats and a six-speed manual. You can also get a DSG. And they've wanted been clamoring for that, and three doors, of course, which some purists maintain is the only shape for a GTI, even though practicality often demands otherwise. So that's going to be $37,490, which is considerably under the five-door entry, which starts from almost $42,000. And you still can get DSG, and the RRP for that is still under $40,000. So we're very pleased with the way we've managed to price that, and we've got a huge amount of interest in it. Launches for that tomorrow, and you can, Behind the Wheel will be there. And I look forward to reading what you guys have to say on Thursday.
Excellent. Well, wonderful. I can't wait to get my hands on it. Obviously, we're sending somebody else. We're letting them do the hard yards,
sadly,
and all the difficult stuff. And we'll just take
be
it.
Be happy to make that happen for you,
Kat. Lovely. Paul, as always, great to talk to you. Big year on the cards for Volkswagen, and I'm sure sooner rather than later you'll be joining us again on the show.
Love to. Thanks, chaps.
Right, so from one very popular small German car to another that kind of took the world by storm a few years ago, we're finally going to see or have seen the second generation of it. And I got to say, does remind me, however, of someone who's kind of just taken a massive swig of a gin and tonic and got too much sort of fresh lime.
I just was going to say, I don't think there is too much of a gin and tonic, is there? I mean,
no, but you know when you get that big lump of lime and it kind of just gives you that tart sort of animation.
Well,
the face on this car, I think, has a little bit of that about it. I might be on my own here. I don't know.
I don't know. I think you might be, because we are about to talk to the wonderful David McCarthy from Mercedes-Benz. I've seen you all over social media talking about the car, showing us pictures, David. Tell us what it's like.
Well, I'd have to say that if anyone, about car looks, I suppose I'm speaking to the right people. You've got to pay that one.
Absolutely, yes. Points awarded, points well awarded. Now, the A-Class, it is, I must say, it's a gorgeous-looking car. It's got a bit more of a downturn sort of face about it, though, doesn't it, than the car it replaces?
It won't have escaped you that the front design of that and the new CLS are very similar.
Very.
Now, that's a conscious decision that Gordon Wagoner made. And if you think about it, the A-Class, is one of the entry points to our range, and the CLS, sits obviously a lot further up. But he decided to design it, I quite like, in the flesh, it has I'd call it a very assertive, a very confident face. Don't know if I'd call it a gin and tonic face. Perhaps, perhaps a Campari and soda. Or what about an espresso martini?
You're hitting into Miller's territory very nicely there, I must say.
But look, the car is very important to Mercedes for a number of reasons, but a number of things that they've addressed in the new car. They've made the car, it's got more legroom, more shoulder room, more luggage capacity, so a number of things that people raise with us over the years, needed a little bit more room here, a little bit more room there, they have done. The engine lineup, there's a number of new engines in there, which the one we'll get in Australia first is the 1.4-litre four-cylinder. Now, that's, you're probably going, it's 125 kilowatts, guys. And that'll be the entry-level engine. There will be a diesel. There'll be an A250. A35 is coming, as is A45.
A35? So, wow, that's a number I've not heard from Merck before.
So that's going to come in under A45.
But above A250.
But above A250.
Gotcha.
And I think that's a good move, because the A45 is right at the top of the A-Class price bracket. And with our success in AMG, like last year, we did over 7,000 AMGs. The demand for AMG in the Australian market is huge. That's one in five cars.
Mm.
A-Class, is a very important part of that. The A45 is consistently in the top five AMGs for us. I suppose the thing about the new car that you're most interested in is the interior and the Mercedes-Benz user experience. Think everything about Hello Google and all those systems. This is another level. So if, for example, I'm sitting in the car and I go, I feel cold, it will turn the temperature up in the car. If I say, I feel hot, it will turn it down and then organise a date for me.
I was just about to say that. Is it really taken to that nth degree?
I haven't worked out what it will do if I say rub my feet.
Well, as always, Dave, it's great to spend some time with you. We could chat all day. As always, we ran out of time way too quick. So don't be a stranger. Come back, visit again soon on Behind the Wheel. Good on you, David.
I won't. And just remember, don't talk to those other brands. Just talk to me.
David, you are wonderful. Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Bye now.
Havel have just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV boasting a 180kW turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone's raving about or havel.com.au.
Owners of Japanese cars can now complete the look of their vehicles with new Japanese domestic market number plates. Available in various states and territories across Australia, Altrex Auto Accessories has been quick to expand its range of market-leading number plate protectors to include the new Japanese style. Providing weather protection along with theft protection when used in conjunction with anti-theft screws, the Altrex number plate protectors are made from top-quality high-impact acrylic, and the Altrex product cannot be beaten for durability, and with Colorbond non-rusting clips, they're quickly and easily fitted. Order JDM number plate protectors from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store now at altrex.com.au.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. Where motoring starts.
Oh yeah, started with a big bang this week. The A-Class Mercedes-Benz, the Volkswagen Polo, the Peugeot 5008, the BMW X3, and Pufferfish in Tokyo with Pete.
Hey, don't call me names. Thank you very much. And I don't touch the stuff.
A man I know who devours Pufferfish, so confident in his skills, in fact, to cut it up, because it does take an expert chef to do that. He does it at home. He goes down the local pier, yep, gets the puffer, the poisonous puffer fish out, brings them home, carves them up, and feeds them to his wife, who is still alive. She may have had a couple of hospital visits, but she's still with us. It is Simon Lai, of course. Hi, Simon.
Hi, guys. How are we?
How are you, Simon?
I don't know what the previous conversation was, but I do remember there was an episode of The Simpsons where they talked about that fish.
Yeah?
Mm. Yeah, and, you know, Homer, he probably got in trouble with it.
Well, actually, as I understand it, some people do pass away every year if it hasn't been properly prepared.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty dangerous. Mm. Yeah.
It must be bloody delicious.
We catch them here, we just throw them back in, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think I'd stick to yes, or go veggie, I think.
Now, Simon, the men behind the Honda Accord V6, I reckon, in their days would have had puffer fish, probably at the launch of the car, maybe.
Yes, on crackers.
On crackers, yeah. We drove the Honda Accord V6 last year and were impressed with, I suppose, its on-road manners and its build quality and the list of standard inclusions. It was sticker shock that I think was our biggest issue when we kind of gave the car back and then looked up the price and we went, oh, how did you feel about it when you found out about the price?
Yeah, I probably agree with everything you said there in a nutshell. Unfortunately, this thing is not going to be back again. I think the next reincarnation, they're doing away with the V6 variant. So this is the last one of the lot. They're replacing them with a bunch of turbos. Mm. But, you know, turbo engines being what they are nowadays, they're pretty amazing. And you're going to get some amazing performance out of them without having the six-cylinder. But, yeah, you're right. It was really nice to drive, which Hondas usually are. I find, you know, they're stable and they're just nice, quiet and comfortable to drive, great handling. You know, the V6 3.5-litre is where it's at, really. That's what you want to know about. And, of course, it has, you know, a bit of meaty performance there. It looks a bit classy, but has just a bit that a little bit extra punch there, and a nice growl to go with it, which is what you expect.
That's good.
Like you said, comes with all the features, really. It's a good family car. Like, you have things like retractable sunshade on the rear windscreen, rear door blinds, just those little things that really help out when you have a family. You got a touch screen, you've got leather seats, heated, electrically adjustable memory function on them, and all the safety features like LCAS, the lane keep assist. But all of that comes in at $52,000. So, yeah, it is a bit of dosh.
For a Honda Accord, indeed. Do you think the mistake was that they put the Accord badge on the back and possibly should have popped Legend on the back of it? Would that maybe have given it more appeal?
Well, it does say V6 on there, but yeah, maybe a different.
Well, the Honda Legend was a good car, and it's got good heritage in this country, but it's sort of disappeared, and I suppose this is kind of the closest incarnation that we'll maybe ever likely see that's like the Legend ever again.
True. Well, we're not going to see it anymore, are we?
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, well, look, if you're prepared to spend a coin, it's certainly a good car. There's nothing wrong with it. As you say, it goes beautifully, looks good, drives nice, has got all the bells and whistles, but you just got to be prepared to stump up that 52 plus you're on roads for a Honda Accord.
That's it.
And I suppose that takes us to sort of our next topic, where if you were at a pub and you were sitting around going, yeah, just bought myself a Honda Accord, and the bloke next to you said, well, what'd you pay for it? And you went, 52 grand. Would it be fair to say your car just in that instance made you look like a fool?
Probably agree with that.
Well, the reason why I'm asking or posing that question is because the fabulous, the beautiful Rachel Franco posed it to me a little earlier today, and I've been coming up with a list. And Rach, welcome back to the show.
Hey.
I hope you've set aside a decent amount of time today, because my list covers four foolscap pages.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
I, like you, can talk at length about cars making fools out of me.
So what brought it on?
Well, I've actually been having some issues with my clapped out Mazda 6, my lovely 12-year-old car, and twice I've taken it to the mechanic, and twice it hasn't done. So it's sort of doing this grinding noise when you turn the steering wheel at low speed, and you can feel it sort of coming up through the steering.
Right.
So I thought at one point it might have been like steering, it didn't have steering fluid, or, you know, something had happened.
Power steering pump, that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah. The two times I've taken it to the mechanic, both times it won't make the noise and they can't find anything wrong. And
I honestly
think I'm just a ditz turning up, you know, with my cars not working properly.
That
is
very
funny.
There's
definitely something wrong, and it just knows. I honestly think my car has a personality. It's a living thing, and it just knows. Got to make a fool out of Rach.
Well, look, you're not on your own there. It's similar things have happened to me over the years where you're right. You've got this noise and it drives you just absolutely batty.
Yeah.
Yep.
You arrive at the mechanic and you go in and you explain with much exasperation. They go, right, well, yeah, give us a listen. And you take it out and it just runs brilliantly, smoothly, yeah. Perfectly, not a noise in sight.
Yes.
And they look at you and go, you're right, mate? You sure?
Yes. You look like a moron.
Yeah, completely.
It's great.
Yeah.
I really love it.
As a expert motoring journalist, I get asked quite a lot of questions, and a friend of mine just recently bought a new car, brought it around and went, I've got to figure out how this thing works. And I went, oh, you sure, that'll be easy. Yeah. How do you reset a tyre pressure monitor in a Volkswagen?
Oh, yes, I can tell you how to do it.
Can you?
I had to do it the other day in my Audi. Same thing. You just go, it's quite a process. Yes, it's quite a process. You have to go to the MMI and you have to go back and you have to go to settings, and it takes a while.
Well, I thought I was in settings.
No, what you have to do is, you can't just go into settings without having the instruction manual on your knee, I can tell you that.
Okay.
And when it says page 209, what they really mean is 211.
So of course they do.
It takes a while, I can tell you.
Pete, I know you've had a couple of incidents over the years, mainly with coin holders that stick out the wrong spot and kind of take out a kneecap.
Oh, there's one car I used to have. Every time I got in, I'd bash my leg on the dash, sort of stuck out over where the door was, and I'd just bop it every time I got into it. But look, I've had all sorts of amusing things happen. You get to, you're driving a test car, and you think, now, wait a sec, I better just top this up with fuel. Now, just hang on a minute. Where is the where's the filler? What side is that on? And then how do I open the flap to get the thing out? And that is very embarrassing indeed. Drop a credit card down between your seat and the center console. See how you get on then and
good
how stupid you feel. And I've done all sorts of mad things, and it's just the way it is with cars. I think they're designed to make us look silly.
Well, I didn't have quite the credit card experience. Mine involved a French fry, and I was trying to come home.
Didn't have to go any further.
Well, it was it was a cheeky burger and a kind of small fries on the way home, because I was being cooked some hideous Mexican dish. So I thought, well, I'll just top up, and then the kid gets in the car and goes, "Why is there French fries down there?"
Oh, my God, that's too funny.
And I went, well, it wasn't me. She went, well, it had to be, because I know you only picked the car up today and they never give you a dirty car. I was busted.
That's
so funny.
Oh, that is hilarious. And how was the Mexican anyway?
I didn't eat it.
Consumed through gritted teeth, I bet.
The Labrador loved it.
I love it when you lose fries in the car and about 12 months later you find it and it's like a little cement.
Yes, correct.
Knick-knack souvenir sort of floating around.
Something that you can take and use in your daughter's dollhouse if she needs to for the rest of time. Simon, I'm sure you've had some experiences because, look, I know it's not often that you're made to look foolish, Simon. It's something that I know is highly unusual for you, but I'm sure some stage in your last 23 years it's happened to you.
For all of us manual drivers, you know, it's always embarrassing to stall the car with the lack of control on the clutch. But especially nowadays with all the new cars, like the ones that we all test drive, I find that if they have the auto start-stop system in them and they got push-button start, you're like waiting at the lights and it suddenly shuts off and then you have to go. And then it just won't go. And then you've got to figure out, how am I going to start the car again? And then people are horning at you and swearing at you. And you're like, oh, I swear, I do this for a living.
That's
so true.
I'm swearing and beeping at you.
It's so true, though, because then they've got the auto shut-off system. And
if
they've
got caught in between.
Yeah, if you stall
at the wrong time and then you step on the accelerator, it doesn't do anything.
And another thing is, in some manual cars, you have to make sure that the car is not only in neutral, but you have to have your foot on the clutch and on the brake at the same
time.
With your teeth.
Panicking. Oh, God, I got to go. Everyone's like, what's going on, man?
And normally it's something really awesome-looking car, too. Yeah. It's one that draws loads of attention to.
I did that in the Mustang.
See, there you go. As always, guys, we could go on forever. We are out of time. Thank you for your brilliant contribution. Look forward to your next one next week. And we are driving, definitely, I know I said it last week, but we're definitely driving the Kia Stinger next week, along with the Havel H9. See you all. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone's raving about, or havel.com.au.